Jeff, let's use the chorus for God So Loved the World for closing. We haven't used that for a while. Before I start the message, I'm going to share with you one of the things from this little book here. I always enjoy this. Hope you do too. I get a lot out of it and find it quite interesting. This has to do with the emperor penguin. The emperor penguins spend their entire lives in the frigid Antarctic. Each year, the mother lays one egg on the feet of the father. And the father covers the egg with a flap of skin. Now, the mother leaves and she goes fishing for 2 months. Father is literally left with an egg on his feet. For 2 months, these fathers are left to brave the frigid winter of icy temperatures, cruel winds, and blinding storms that at times drop to 100 degrees below zero. Minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Below zero now. How do they stay warm? The emperors, now remember, these little emperor penguins, the fathers, they're standing on this egg for 2 months, enduring all this. So how do they stay warm? Why, the emperor penguins huddle together and they take turns moving to the inside of the group. Once they have had a chance to warm up, they shuffle to the colder outside edge of the huddle so the others can warm up. In the meantime, while they're doing this, because they're shuffling to do it, they still have their feet on that egg. They're moving the egg as they do so. But that's how they keep warm. During this time, 2 months now, each father loses a lot of weight. You may have heard favorable things about the Atkins diet or the LA diet, but you would not want to try the penguin diet because Father Emperor Penguin loses two-thirds of his body weight in that 2 months by not eating. He doesn't eat at all for two solid months because he's centered on that egg. His feet are on that egg for two solid months. After 2 months, when the baby hatches, the mother emperor penguin has 10 days to get home before Junior starves. How does she know when to show up? How would she do that by chance, by evolution? How would they survive if such was the case? She arrives, the mother penguin arrives right on time every year, having waddled some 50 miles with a belly full of fish for her baby. Not for the father penguin, mind you. He's lost 2/3 of his body weight. The food's not for the father. The food is for that little one. And she arrives full with a belly full of fish for the little one, not the father. Think of that now. But that's okay because now Dad leaves to go fishing. Why do these crazy penguins choose the dead of winter to lay their eggs? Just one egg. But why choose the dead of winter to do that? Because when the baby is ready to start his swimming lessons in the spring, the weather has warmed, some of the ice has melted, and the distance to the shoreline is the shortest, bringing the open waters closer to the nesting sites. And when the chicks are old enough to take to the seas and fish on their own, they have the shortest distance to travel. That all happened by chance? Well, I don't think so. I think not. God, in his wisdom, cares for all his creatures. He has put within the emperor penguins the perfect instincts needed for their survival. That's how they survive. I thought that was quite interesting, though, you know, that Papa Penguin, he's standing on that egg for 2 solid months. In minus 100 degrees, below zero weather at times, and all that wind, and all he does is, you know, they're like in a circle, and all he does is he shuffles a little bit. They shuffle to the inside so they can get warm from the ones on the outside, and the outside ones, they're getting cold, and then they shuffle a little more for 2 solid months, and he loses 2/3 of his body weight, and Mama comes back and says, she got a belly full of fish. Does Papa get any? No. It's all for the little one. Imagine that. Of course, she has regurgitated, you know, when she... defeats her little one, but Papa gets nothing. He's got to go fishing on his own. And he's lost 2/3 of his body weight. I just find that amazing. But the Lord takes care of him. I find that amazing too. Well, to our study now. To our little journey to Mark. We ended last week with the idea that Jesus wants his followers. That means us today as Christians. That means us as his disciples, as his followers. He wants us to live, and what he was teaching the apostles and his disciples then, he wants us to live with the attitude and the mindset of being a servant. Remember what he said at the end of that. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to be a ransom for many. That's why we're going to sing the chorus, "For God so loved the world," because that's what it encompasses, that. Well, this morning we come to an incident in Mark's gospel that is shortly after this incident that we read about last week, following our Lord's words to the apostles, in which he shows how he is the ultimate servant once again. Now, it is the latter part of March. It's the late part of March of 30 or 33 A.D. He's making his way to Jerusalem for the last time, last part of March. And he's leaving to go to Jerusalem. He and the apostles, they're making their way to Jerusalem for the last time. And this is Passover time. And so as they're journeying through, going up to Jerusalem, as we read last week, there's a lot of people going to Jerusalem. And a lot of people can't make it for the Passover. But the crowds of people, thousands of people, are making their way to Jerusalem. So you can imagine all the people that are around Jesus at the time. They had made their way to Old Jericho and the New Jericho. And now they're leaving it. Jericho now was about, and this is not the Jericho, now keep this in mind if you remember your Old Testament history. This is not the Jerichos that Joshua destroyed. It's not in the same area. They're different. There was an old Jericho that was established not on the site of the old Jericho that Joshua destroyed. That was in ruins. But shortly after that, during the time of the king, another Jericho was established. That became old Jericho. And then there was a new Jericho. This new Jericho was one that Herod the Great built. That was the most popular one. And they were about a mile apart. Now, when I explain to you where they were, you'll understand that they were not close or near to the Jericho that Joshua destroyed. Jericho was about, give or take or so, Jericho was about 15 to 20 miles, both of these, were about 15 to 20 miles from Jerusalem. So Jesus still has a little ways to go to get up to Jerusalem. It is northeast, 15 to 20 miles northeast from Jerusalem. So he's just not just going down through the highways and the roads to get to Jerusalem. There's places that he's passing by as he goes through. And that's the crowds do. Old Jericho and New Jericho is at the foot of a pass which led up from the Jordan Valley to the central highlands and to Jerusalem. The elevation of Old and New Jericho was 900 feet below the Mediterranean. So it's still below sea level, 900 feet below the Mediterranean Sea. So they still got a ways to go. And 3,400 feet lower than Jerusalem. That just gives you an idea of the geographical and setting the scene of our encounter here. Now the parallel accounts for this can be found in Matthew chapter 20, verses 29 through 34, and Luke 18, verses 35 through 43, and Luke 19:1. And I'm going to reference those as we go through. That's why I mentioned those. What do we have here? Jesus encounters two blind men. Now Mark, he only mentions one. And that significance we're going to get to. In Mark chapter 10, verses 56 through 52, which will conclude chapter 10, it's what he says. Then they came to Jericho. And as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and the large crowd, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." In the Greek, that would be Kyrie Eleison.
There was a popular a number of years ago, I think it was back in the 80s and the 90s, there was a popular English group that had a song that they did, Kyrie Eleison, which is Greek, which means, the group was named Mr. Mister, by the way. Not by the way, but Mr. Mister was the name of the group. And Kyrie Eleison, which I'll put it in English for you so that, not in the Greek, but in the English, it's this, K-Y-R-I-E, Eleison. It means, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. So that's what the Greek text tells us. And that's what this beggar man, this blind man, was saying. And many were sternly telling him to be quiet, but he kept crying out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, Call him here. So they called the blind man, saying to him, Take courage, stand up, he is calling for you. Throwing aside his cloak, he jumped up and he came to Jesus. And answering him, Jesus said, What do you want me to do for you? Underscore that, because this is significant. And the blind man said to him, Rabboni, means great teacher or master teacher, what the blind man's calling him. I want to regain my sight. And Jesus said to him, Go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road. Now, if you look back at Matthew chapter 20, the parallel passage, Matthew brings out to us, and that's why we need to pay attention to the parallel accounts, because many believe there's a contradiction when the accounts actually can be harmonized. Matthew brings out there were two. Matthew says that they were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed them, and two blind men sitting by the road, hearing that Jesus was passing by, cried out, Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David. And the crowd sternly told them to be quiet. See, the same thing. But they cried out all the more, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us. And Jesus says, What do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, we want our eyes to be opened. Move with compassion. Mark doesn't say that. Matthew does. Move with compassion. Jesus touched their eyes. Matthew said Jesus touched their eyes. Mark doesn't. And immediately, they regained their sight and followed him. And then when you look at Luke's account in Luke 18, you see a little difference there too. Luke just mentions the one. But he doesn't even say his name. But he recounts the same thing. And we're going to come back to that in just a little bit. You see, Matthew and Mark say that Jesus healed the men as he left Jericho. See that? As he left. Luke says he healed them as he entered. And this is what the text doesn't bring out and what people want to say. Well, there, right there, you see, you got a contradiction in the word. There's a discrepancy there. There's a contradiction in God's word right there. So how can we accept that? How can we believe that? Well, the fact of the matter is there's no contradiction, and the discrepancy can be harmonized very well because there were, in fact, in Jesus' day, two Jerichos and only about a mile apart. There was the old Jericho, and there was the new Jericho, which Herod the Great built. And like I said, they were only about a mile apart. Thus, the healing took place as Jesus left the old Jericho, the old city, and entered the new one. And Mark and only Luke, and Luke again, only mention one man. Matthew mentions that there were two. Now, why is that? People want to say, well, you got a contradiction there. Matthew says there were two. I believe it's because of this. Matthew was an eyewitness. He was one of the apostles right there. So he tells us there were two. Just like when you read back in Mark, you know, when you had the Gadarene men who were possessed by demons. Mark says there was only one guy. Matthew says there were two. He emphasized the fact that there were two. Matthew is more detailed. Mark is more, how we should say, not as detailed as Matthew is, but Mark mentions people's names. And he does that for a significant reason. Mark gives us the name of this blind man. Now, Mark probably didn't know that right then, what his name was. But he did later. Remember, Mark is writing well many years after this had happened. But somehow, of course, I believe Peter was the one that gave Mark his, Peter was an eyewitness too, where Mark got his information from. But they learned who one of those blind men were. And Mark tells us that his name was Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus. Now here's an interesting thing. Mark then tells us, Aramaic, he then tells us that he was the son of Timaeus. Bar, if you remember right, Bar is Aramaic for son, son of Timaeus. And why did Mark do that? He states the very same thing. Why? It's for the benefit of his readers. He's writing to Gentile Christians in Rome. Probably those Gentile Christians didn't understand it, didn't understand Aramaic when he said it was Bartimaeus. So he tells them, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus. He is telling them that's what his name means. Bar means son of. So he's the son of Timaeus. Mark states the very thing for the benefit of his readers. As Brother Don DeWelt said many years ago, Mark and Luke, who wrote upon the testimony of others, only mention the more prominent one whose name had been preserved. Because this man had also become a disciple. But here's an interesting thing that you may not have thought about. What's the meaning of Timaeus? What's the meaning of the name Timaeus? It means this. Timaeus is Aramaic and Hebrew for honor. Timaeus means honor. Thus, son of honor, Timaeus. Do you get the play on words here? Mark is telling us something very significant here. You get the play on words? What happened just previously before? What did James and John have their mother ask Jesus to do? One sat on the left, one sat on the right. What did the rest of the apostles get all upset about? How dare you ask for the seats of honor? That's what the left and right would be, seats of honor. And remember, Jesus asked, what do you want me to do for you? And remember, that's what they said, and that's how they got all bent out of shape. Places of honor? Jesus said, I can't give you that. That's for those who have been prepared for it. My Father knows that. But he did tell them how they were to act. So now comes along Jesus in this incident, and he comes along. Here comes along a man whose name is Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, son of honor. That's a play on words here that Mark is giving us. He's giving us a lesson here. And here these, now, if we go back to Matthew, he tells us there were two men, Mark and Luke, only the one. But they're sitting by the roadside begging. Notice this now. They're deaf. They are not deaf. They're just blind. They can hear, but they can't see. And Bartimaeus asked someone in the crowd, doesn't say who, but he asked him, what's going on? What's all the commotion? What's happening? And of course, he's told. They tell him, Jesus of the Nazarene, Jesus of Nazareth is going by. He hears that. He hears that. And here is where it begins to get interesting. Bartimaeus takes the initiative. And he begins to yell. And he begins to cry out. And the crowd of people, what do? Do they say, just be quiet. We'll take you to him. You want to see Jesus? You want to see Jesus? We'll take you to him. Did they do that? No. They were annoyed. They were annoyed at this guy who was yelling and who was crying out. Why? They didn't want to be any inconvenience. They're going on the way to Jerusalem to the Passover. And they're with Jesus of Nazareth, is what they say. You notice this? Something about this? Can we think about this today? They care nothing about Bartimaeus and his friend's blindness. To them, they're just beggars. Blind beggars on the road. And they're an annoyance. They're a nuisance. So what do they tell them to do? Shut up. Be quiet. That's what they tell them. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear you. Isn't that something? They surely have known and they have heard the disciples, the apostles with Jesus and his disciples. Many of them were disciples. They knew what Jesus could do. They knew the healing power of Jesus. They knew that he could heal those blind men. But they weren't thinking of the blind men, were they? No. They were thinking of themselves. They just wanted to get to Jerusalem. And about these guys? Maybe some of them thought, just give them a few coins and they'll be quiet and they'll be on their way. Isn't that how some people today, you think, react? As far as Jesus is concerned and with others? I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to be annoyed. And a lot of that, what we have happening today, is that not true? After all, we don't want to upset things. We don't want to disturb things. We don't want to be disturbed. Now, why many people are quieting down as far as who they are? As far as they're a Christian? And why the world wants us to be shut up? And many do? Well, all the while, there are people out there who are going to hell in a handbasket. But coming back to this, that, however, does not deter him. Bartimaeus, what the English doesn't bring out, but the Greek does, Bartimaeus cries out even louder, says, "Son of David, have mercy on us." Imagine, he was shouting. They couldn't get him to shut up. And so finally, now Bartimaeus and the other blind man must have, at some time or other, heard about the Lord's healing power. Possibly, you know, had heard about it sometime or other. They were blind, remember, not deaf. Jesus has been around for 3.5 years. Can you imagine the scene now? Here's an interesting thing. Notice what Bartimaeus called Jesus. The crowd says, "Jesus the Nazarene, Jesus of Nazareth is going by." Notice what Bartimaeus, that's why we have to surmise that he heard about Jesus somewhere. Because notice that Bartimaeus did not say Jesus of Nazareth. Instead, Bartimaeus says, "Jesus, Son of David." And the significance of that? Bartimaeus was recognizing him as the Messiah when he said that. He identified Jesus as the Messiah. Maybe thinking of what it tells us in Ezekiel chapter 34, 23-24. "Then I will set them over one shepherd, my servant David, and he will feed them. And he will feed them himself and be their shepherd. And I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken." And you can also look at Jeremiah chapter 23, verses 5 through 6. So what happens? The Lord heard. Yeah. Jesus stops. And he tells them, probably disciples, tells them, "Call him. Tell him to come here." And notice what they do after that. Suddenly the people change their tune, don't they? And they do what Jesus says. But notice what they say to him. "Hey, he's calling for you. He's calling for you." Now they say. Why? Because Jesus noticed. People hadn't. But Jesus noticed him crying out. He said, "Call him. Come, tell him to come here. I'm not going to ignore him." You see? You get this? Bartimaeus is blind, and yet he sees more than the crowd does. He calls him Son of David. "Have mercy on us." The crowd just says, Jesus of the Nazarene. He's from Galilee. He's from Nazareth. That's just Jesus. But Bartimaeus sees so much more, even though he's blind. He sees more than many people see today, even in the church. So the Lord stopped him. He told his disciples to call the blind men to him. And suddenly, what happens? Notice what Bartimaeus does. What Mark tells us Bartimaeus does. We don't know about the other guy, but what Bartimaeus does. He takes off his cloak. Now, that's very significant, very important, because that blind man, Bartimaeus, he needed his cloak. That's what kept him warm. He throws it off. It tells us that he throws it, and he's blind now, but he can hear. You want to say, well, how did he make his way to Jesus? He can hear. He may be blind, but he can hear. You ever seen a blind person? Those, many of them in here, they get around quite good, don't they? So this guy throws his cloak off and he runs. He doesn't walk, the scriptures tell us. He runs to Jesus. Throws the cloak off and runs to Jesus. And notice, he does not dilly-dally. He runs to Jesus. And then what Jesus asks them, what do you want me to do? Now, Jesus probably knew already. He knew those guys were blind. He knew Bartimaeus was blind. He knew the other guy was blind. He knew. But yet he asked them, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do for you? See how significant that is? Bartimaeus, son of honor. What did the apostles, what did James and John ask the Lord? And what did Jesus say? What do you want me to do for you? We want the seats of honor. One on your left, one on your right. And the others wanted that too. Now Jesus is showing an example of true servanthood. He asked the blind man, he asked him, what Mark tells us, Bartimaeus, what do you want me to do for you? Notice the same question. What did these guys say? What did Bartimaeus say? We want to see. We don't want to be blind anymore. We want to physically see. We want to be able to see, is what they said. Notice the difference? And he says, Rabboni, great teacher, master teacher, want to regain my sight. And Jesus heals them. Matthew tells us, and Luke, one of the two, Matthew or Luke tells us that Jesus touched them. Mark doesn't say that. But Mark does say what Jesus said. What all three writers said, go, your faith has made you well. Notice what happens after. Immediately, he regained his sight. And he began following him. The blind man began following Jesus. Notice this time a difference. This time, Jesus